The first vaccines are out. We'll hear from someone who's taken it. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Hospital and healthcare workers are the first in line for the vaccines. We'll hear from the head of epidemiology at Memorial Hospital about the rollout. Also, what if there was a ferry from the mainland to the islands along the coast in South Florida? Would you use it? Well, there's a new ferry from Miami to Miami Beach, and we'll hear whether it's been successful and whether it can be expanded. And finally, there's still millions of CARES Act dollars left for people to access. The Miami-Dade Rise Fund will join us to answer your questions about getting small business loans to help you get through this pandemic. All of that today on Sundial. First, the news. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for joining us. Healthcare workers in Florida are receiving the first vaccinations against COVID-19. More hospitals in the state are expected to receive frozen vials of the Pfizer vaccine today. Federal officials say a vaccine will be available for the majority of Americans by spring or summer of next year. WLRN's healthcare reporter Veronica Zaragovia joins us now. Veronica, always great to have you.
Thank you so much.
And also joining us is Rachel Guran. She's the Director of Epidemiology and Infection Prevention at Memorial Healthcare System and a registered nurse. Rachel, thank you so much for the time today.
Thank you for having me.
And we want to hear from you. Once the vaccine becomes available to you, will you take it? What are your concerns? We'd like to hear your thoughts. 800-743-9576. Again, that's 800-743-9576. WLRN. You can always post your comment or question on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. Rachel, I want to start with you because my understanding is you actually received your first dose of the vaccine this morning. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Tell me about what that was like. I mean, you know, when you walked up and you got it, I mean, but just take me through that moment for you. What were you thinking?
It was definitely an exciting day. In my lifetime to see a new vaccine like this developed so quickly with so much support, global support, and all of our healthcare workers, we are so excited to be able to take that vaccine first. Memorial Healthcare System has a really great process to make sure that the access is available for every single one of the members of our healthcare family. To be able to get that vaccine, get an appointment and get in there and get the vaccine immediately. It's about 10 minutes for the process.
And you still have to get a second shot, right?
Correct. Second shot is about 3 weeks after the first shot.
I mean, I get a sense from what you're saying, but tell me what like the atmosphere is like for you and your coworkers. I mean, is everybody as excited or is there anybody who's maybe a little apprehensive?
Vaccine hesitancy is something the public health community has been dealing with for a very, very long time. So it's extremely important for ourselves as healthcare providers, as leaders in our organization, all different types of employees, registered nurses, physicians, our environmental services, people who deliver the food trays, the leaders in all of those departments, people who are looked at for their really good information to be able to get the vaccine and then spread that information throughout the healthcare system, throughout the healthcare community. So there is acceptance of the vaccine to make sure that we are inclusive and we are maximizing our benefits of vaccinating as many healthcare workers as possible.
And look, you are in the front lines. So I'm just wondering, do you feel now protected? Do you feel safe?
I do feel safe that we will be able to shorten the scourge of this pandemic on our healthcare system, on the world with a vaccine. But that does not mean we, as healthcare workers, stop wearing our personal protective equipment in the hospital and around the public, that we don't stop wearing our masks, washing our hands, and doing the physical distancing. Right. That is still important to stop the pandemic.
Again, the number is 800-743-9576. You know, the vaccine is not going to be available to the general public, to the rest of many of us, and that's going to be in phases, by the way, not until the spring and the summer. But if when it does, are you excited about taking it? Or maybe you have some questions, because this may be the fastest we've ever come up with a vaccine. Again, 800-743-9576. Veronica, remind us again, who's getting the vaccine right now? Is it just people like Rachel?
Well, the first people are the frontline medical workers who are in touch with patients who have COVID-19. And so that's, you know, the first are the staff at hospitals, and then it will move on to the residents of long-term care facilities.
And remind us again how this vaccine has to be handled, because we kept hearing about how it has to be kept very cold, and there's really, I mean, like there's a small window from when you take it out of that to when you actually have to give it to somebody.
That's right. So the vaccines have been arriving in these thermal shippers from Pfizer, and you may have seen B-roll on the TV if you watch TV news. And those can be refilled with dry ice every 5 days, but they can also be refrigerated once they arrive for up to 5 days in about 41 degrees. And so they last up to that point, and then they're no longer, you know, then the manufacturers don't recommend using them.
Yeah. And by the way, all healthcare workers, is it mandatory that they take it?
No, it's not mandatory. So far, what we know from Memorial and Jackson is that it's strongly recommended, because these vaccines are very effective against severe cases of the disease, but they're not mandatory.
Okay. Rachel, yeah, what do they tell you at work? Like, you don't have to take it, or you do, or what's, I mean, how does this going to work out?
Correct that the vaccine is not mandatory. We are strongly recommending it to all of our healthcare workers for the maximum protection. We know that they provide healthcare in these high risk settings, so we do want to mitigate any risks of exposures to our patients and to the rest of our healthcare workers.
Yeah. Again, the number is 800-743-9576. It won't be available to many of us until the spring or summer, but when it does, will you take it? Let's go to David in Boynton. David, thank you so much for the call. How are you feeling about it?
You might have answered my first question, which is, being 69, not really having any underlying health issues other than my age, when would I be expected to get it? And you're saying sometime spring or summer, I guess, is what you're saying. If that's the case, let me just ask my second question based on that answer.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Okay. The second question is, this vaccine, when they did their testing, and I don't know if your guest would know this, did they, during their testing, actually expose people to the COVID-19 virus after getting the vaccination? So how deeply was it tested, I guess, is my question.
All right, David, good question. Veronica, I'll start with you. I mean, again, as I mentioned, this may be the fastest we've ever come up with a vaccine. I don't know that for sure. I've been looking for that information. But, I mean, what do we know about the testing? Did they actually try to give the virus to people to see if it worked? How did it work?
Well, what I can tell you is that even though it was, you know, terminology like Operation Warp Speed is a little bit confusing to people, it doesn't mean that they cut any corners. They did do three complete phases of the trial studies. So this is a very safe vaccine to take. And they included adults. So this wasn't tested on children or on pregnant women. And for that reason, I wouldn't be able, certainly couldn't advise anyone, but somebody 65 years old and older, they have certainly been included in these trials and
yeah,
would be
and
safe.
Yeah, and that would go high, you'd be higher up on the list, my understanding. Rachel, I wanted your take on what David asked there. I mean, you know, is what the testing entailed and what we know.
So the clinical trials did have a certain population take a placebo and then looked at the after effects of both groups to see how the placebo did and how people who received the actual vaccine did. And many of these trials are continuing. So if that happens, where they do have, you know, exposures to COVID-19, we would be able to see the after effects of the vaccine.
Okay. Again, I'm talking with WLRN's healthcare reporter Veronica Zaragovia and Rachel Guran. She's the Director of Epidemiology and Infection Prevention at Memorial Healthcare System. Again, healthcare workers in Florida already starting to receive their first doses of the vaccine this week. Now, you can find out more of our reporting on COVID-19 vaccines on our social media at WLRN Sundial, or just go to our website, WLRN.org. And again, we want to hear from you, your thoughts, your questions. When the vaccine is available, will you take it? What concerns do you have? 800-743-9576. I want to go to Joanna now in Davie. Joanna, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing good. What are you feeling about this?
Okay, so I read an article. After they had given a vaccine to people in England, some people that have severe allergies had reactions. Now, I have a severe allergy to aspirin and some kinds of fish. So I was wondering if it would be safe for someone like me who has severe reactions and severe allergies, if it would be safe for me for someone, because I understand they were issuing warnings in England for those people to maybe hold off taking the vaccine.
Very good question. Rachel, I'm going to start with you. What do we know about people like Joanna who have allergic reactions?
We would definitely recommend that you talk to your healthcare provider about your history of allergic reactions. You are correct. That is one of the contraindications that has been offered for the emergency use authorization of the vaccine are people with severe allergies to medications and other types of injections and intravenous types. So severe allergies, people who have had anaphylaxis reactions in the past or who carry an EpiPen because of a past allergy, definitely talk to your doctor first.
Yeah, I get the sense, too, as this starts to roll out, these are questions that are going to come up a lot, and hopefully we'll find those answers. Joanna, thank you so much for bringing that up. You know, Rachel, who else shouldn't be taking this? I mean, you know, pregnant women, I think you had mentioned that, too. I don't know. Who is not a good example of a person that should take it?
That's a great question, and like I said before, the only contraindication would be these people who have a history of severe allergic reactions. There is no contraindication for women who are pregnant or planning to become pregnant or are breastfeeding. So the only thing is that the clinical trials did not include pregnant women. So that is a conversation you would have with your doctor. But we do know that there are harms to the unborn baby when you do get COVID-19. So preventing COVID-19, those benefits may outweigh the risks, and it is not a contraindication.
Yeah, and talking about people who've had COVID, either of you, Rachel, Veronica, can answer this for me. Do we know if you've already had it, should you still get the vaccine?
I'll let Rachel.
Rachel, sorry. Go ahead. I'll start with you.
So we do. The CDC does recommend you defer your vaccination for 90 days after your first COVID. That is to really give the people who have not had COVID priority for getting the vaccine.
All right. Veronica, I don't know if you wanted to add on that.
Yeah, sure. Just something to keep in mind is that if you've had COVID-19, there isn't an exact study on how long you might have an immunity, if at all. So the best thing you could do is to get this vaccine that will protect you against having any severe symptoms or a severe case of what becomes COVID-19. So it's definitely recommended to get it even if you've had COVID-19.
And what if I've had other vaccines, other shots? Let's say I had the flu shot recently. Is that something to be concerned about, or do I have to spread out all my vaccines? How does that work?
The CDC is recommending that you spread the vaccines out, so don't get your COVID-19 vaccine and any other vaccine in close proximity to each other.
And what does that mean? What does that mean? Months? Weeks?
About 2 weeks.
Okay. All right. No, that's good to know then, just in case anybody is getting shots and anything else. Again, the number is 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-WLRN. You can always post your comment or question on our Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. Again, for general use, the vaccine isn't going to be available to the rest of us until either the spring or summer. And again, there are phases that Florida has rolled out as to who's going to be getting it. So basically, everybody's getting in line. And where do you belong in that line? We're going to find out as we go. Again, 800-743-9576. Veronica, there are other vaccines right now that are on their way to approval from the FDA. What else do we know?
Right. Well, the first one that will actually is slated to get approval pretty soon is Moderna, but that uses a very similar technology to the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine, the messenger RNA. The next ones would be from AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson, and those actually are different, and they use a technology that's been used for a long time, and what they use is a modified version of a virus that causes the common cold. So they take out a little bit of the genetic material and of that cold, and then they put in a little bit of the genetic code for this particular coronavirus called SARS-CoV-2. And then your body ultimately knows to create antibodies, which is like the little foot soldiers, as the doctors told me, that would fight the coronavirus if you are actually exposed to it.
Yeah. Rachel, are there any plans at Memorial Healthcare System for these other vaccines? How are they going to do that? How are they going to handle that?
Memorial Healthcare System is working very closely with the Department of Health. So we are working with them to secure vaccines and the way that, the Department of Health will supply them.
Yeah. All right. So I got to ask about this question is, you know, we look at the surveys, we see what how people feel about this vaccine. And a Pew study found that looking at different groups specifically, that 40% of Latinos say they would probably or definitely not take the vaccine. And more than half of Black people said the same thing. White people have also expressed skepticism. So, I mean, you look at those numbers, those are pretty high numbers. Rachel, I want to start with you. As a healthcare worker, how do you talk to people who have convinced themselves, no way? And when you look at groups like Latinos and Blacks, there's always been, you know, a history of skepticism and fear and doubt to the medical institutions.
It's a really important question. I think the biggest way we can combat that is by accurate information, so people are confident in their decision to get vaccinated. We do that in the healthcare system by engaging all of these different employee groups, all the different people. Like I said before, we have champions in almost every department that we can talk to people to ensure that they have the opportunities to ask questions, to get clear, accurate information about things like vaccines.
And I mean, is there outreach? Is there a way to reach communities that, you know, the hospital's trying, again, just to help them, just even answer questions?
Correct. On social media, on community outreach events, Memorial Healthcare System does work with many different places in our community, religious organizations, to make sure that we have healthcare personnel, healthcare professionals available for any of these kinds of questions. Because of the public health issue of vaccine uptake and avoiding vaccine hesitancy is so important.
Yeah. Let me get one. Oh, go ahead, Veronica.
Oh, sorry, Luis. I just wanted to jump in that from the perspective of journalists, what we need to do is be very clear what we know and what we don't know. And we know that this disease is extremely dangerous. And so people might feel, first of all, those two the workers in Britain who got ill after taking the vaccine, they've been cured. And you are likely to experience some symptoms like a low-grade fever after getting the vaccine. That's just your body starting the reaction to protect you. So it's nothing that can't be taken care of with medication like Tylenol. So we just need to be very clear about what would happen after you get the vaccine, but that it is very safe. And in terms of, I do hope to do more outreach that would help answer questions, be it through social media, as Rachel has mentioned, or you know, on the air.
All right, I want to get one more call in before we finish up here. I want to go to, I believe I have Jamie joining us now. Jamie in Miami Beach, welcome to the program. Thanks for waiting.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Well, I have a little bit of noise for a second. I'm sorry. But I would like to know if people in leadership in the country, President Trump, President-elect Biden, Vice President, and the Vice President-elect, their team, and governors around the country, are they taking the vaccine? Will that give us some sense of trust?
Okay.
For me, I'm 70 years old and in good health, so I question that. I just hear so much things going on instead about the vaccine, so...
Okay.
I'm interested to hear that.
Interesting question, Jamie. Thank you so much. Veronica, what do we know about politicians? And, you know, because healthcare workers right now getting the first doses, but, you know, like DeSantis, Joe Biden, et cetera, are they also in line first?
Well, we know that former Presidents George Bush and Barack Obama and Bill Clinton have offered to take it. And Dr. Anthony Fauci has also said he would take it publicly. And so I don't know about Governor DeSantis, but I think that everybody who is strongly promoting it would get it. And honestly, if journalists could get it, I'd be at the front of the line if I could. So just, you know. I think that people want to show that there's a lot of confidence in this vaccine.
Yeah. Rachel, I'm going to finish up with you. I mean, the vaccine is giving us a little bit of hope for the future, but healthcare workers in general, what do you need right now? You know, we keep hearing that we're seeing the numbers climb. This is almost as bad, if not in some cases, in some places, worse than what we saw back in the spring and summer. But what do healthcare workers need right now? What's happening?
Healthcare workers have been on this front line since March, working tirelessly every day in our ICUs, in our emergency departments, and they're not seeing this go away. So that's disheartening. It's tiring. And in order to do that, we need a very large percentage of our population to take the vaccine. That is one of our only ways out of this. And then to continue wearing your mask, physical distancing, avoiding congregate settings, hand washing, and staying home when you are sick. By doing that, we can really help our healthcare workers.
A lot of great advice there. And we have to remember, even with the vaccine, it's still going to take a little time as we get the entire population of the world, as much of it as possible, vaccinated, and then to see what happens with the virus at that point. Again, I want to thank Rachel Garand, Director of Epidemiology and Infection Prevention at Memorial Healthcare System, also WLRN's healthcare reporter, Veronica Zaragovia. Rachel, Veronica, thank you so much for the insight.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
And again, just stay tuned to WLRN. Find us on our website. Find us on social media. We're going to keep reporting on this story. We'll keep you updated on everything with the vaccine and, of course, how long we have to continue with our masks and our social distancing to protect ourselves and each other. Well, still to come, there's a new ferry between Miami and Miami Beach. Are you going to use it? Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Well, for those who've spent hours trying to get from Miami to Miami Beach, there's a new transit option, and it doesn't require your car. The private company Poseidon Ferry is now offering a commuter ferry service from downtown Miami to South Beach every day on the hour. WLRN reporter Danny Rivero recently took the ferry to the beach and back and spoke with folks behind the company, and he joins us now. Danny, welcome. How's it going?
Going great, Lewis. Thanks for having me on.
All right. I got to admit that I didn't realize this ferry existed. Not that I go to the beach that often, but it's good to know it's there. Look, we're surrounded by water. It's in our blood. How has there not been a ferry service before this, or did we have one?
You know, it's all a great question, and it's something I've asked myself, you know, a couple of years ago, I went to Istanbul for a while, and, you know, it's notoriously a city that straddles, you know, Asia and Europe, and they have an entire ferry system that, you know, basically wherever you are in the city, if you're on the water, you can easily catch it across to the other side. It's used by a lot of people. It bypasses a lot of the gridlock in that massive city. And so I came back years ago and I thought, well, why don't we have that? Like, come on, yeah. we have the same exact, you know, problems with congestion on the bridges and whatnot. And the answer is just, you know, as to why we haven't had it is just, we just haven't done it. You know, the Miami-Dade County has done studies back to 2003 that recommended that this be tried. And it's just been kind of mused about, like, what if? And then, you know, just a couple of weeks ago, it finally became a reality.
And I think, wasn't it true, though, that during our Basel, they would have a special ferry, you know, back and forth? I thought I'd heard that. Right, but it was only for our Basel.
Yeah, I mean, there's been some really gimmicky things happening. Like during Art Basel, it was Uber. Like they had an Uber boat, but even I looked into it to sidestep the traffic. But then it was like $25 each way. Like, come on,
right? So this ferry, who is it for? Is it for the tourists or commuters?
So the company Poseidon Ferry is explicit in that they want this to be for commuters. They want this to be for locals. Obviously, people visiting can use it, and they're encouraged to use it. But they've set it up in terms of where the stations are, how the pricing is, to encourage locals to use it. For locals, if you're a, you know, Miami-Dade County resident, it's $5 each way. And if you're a visitor coming from out of town, it'd be $10 each way.
Okay. All right. I mean, trying to just put that price point into my head. I mean, for the couple of weeks that it's been open, have a lot of people been using it?
So I did talk to the CEO of the company, Jonathan Sylvia, and he told me, look, I took the boat across, you know, round trip last week, and on both ways, I was the only passenger on it, right?
Oy, okay, all right.
but when I was getting back onto it to go back to the mainland, there was a couple people that came off of it. I did talk to some of them. They were first time users, you know, downtown Miami residents. And they said, you know, they were youngish, like late 20s. And they said, well, this is kind of cool. You know, like we come out to the beach. Now we know we could just walk a couple blocks over and, you know, take this little boat. And then we, you know, have a drink on the bar. There's a bar in the boat. And just kind of leisurely make your way to the beach. And they were saying they were already making plans to use it again. And I did run into, when I got back to the mainland, a man that was boarding it, who he was visiting for business, but he's been here for a couple of weeks on business from New York. And he already took it four times. He was boarding it for the fourth time to go to the beach. And he said, this is amazing. I love it. And he was paying the full $10 price.
Yeah. Again, talking with WLRN reporter Danny Rivero, you could read about this new commuter ferry service from Miami to Miami Beach. Just go to our website, WLRN.org. We've also included photos on social media. And I would just post this question. I'm going to just ask, if you're on Facebook or Twitter right now, just look up WLRN Sundial. Would you take this? Knowing what it costs, would you take this? I want to hear from some of you now. Danny, I mean, this is interesting. So you get on, there's nobody there. You only ran into a couple of people at one point. It made me think of, you know, the Brightline and this really nice train that could take you up and down to West Palm Beach and back in Fort Lauderdale. But every time I got on it, it was more empty than not. And I'm just thinking, right, do South Floridians want to get out of their car and get on a boat? Do they want to do that?
You know, it's a good question. And there is a, you know, a central difference between these is that Brightline, for whatever reason, and I don't understand it, they never wanted to be a commuter thing. They explicitly branded themselves as a luxury option, which, you know, as someone who I like commuting, I like transit, I like trains. It was like, why would you do that? I don't understand. But on the ferry side, they're explicitly making this for locals, for people that want to use it. I will mention they have it's $5 right now for locals, but they do have a plan in the future to have like a commuter, like pass kind of thing, which would actually come out to $3 a trip, which would make it really comparable for public transit and a lot cheaper than any ride sharing. You know, we still don't have a train to the beach. Another thing is just where the stations are, where the stops are. So one of them is on the kind of the mouth of the Miami River. It's in front of the James L. Knight Center, which is just beyond the first bridge, the bridge that goes to Brickell Avenue. So if you're hopping on or getting off there, you really are in the center of the city. You're right in the middle of downtown, and then you walk, you know, probably 100 feet across the bridge, and you're on Brickell Avenue, where there's tons of jobs.
Yeah.
And on the South Beach side, it leaves you right at Fifth Street and West Avenue, which is, you know, that's very central.
Right. No. It sounds like good places to have it. But you mentioned something a second ago about another form of getting across from Miami to Miami Beach. And so this is happening now as former Miami-Dade Mayor Carlos Jimenez was in talks with a Chinese company, Genting, to build this monorail connecting the mainland to the beach. Do we know where that stands? Is that still a possibility?
You know, that's a good question. And I don't have the full answer like in front of me, but those certainly are conversations that have been happening for a while. I mean, and they've been happening for more than a generation, you know, like to be completely clear, like both the city of Miami, Miami Beach and the county, they've been musing over like how to make transit across the causeway better or make a train. And it's just been a lot of talk. Like, I don't think there's any way around that.
Yeah.
There's not been essentially any action on this. And in this case, this private company, Poseidon, you know, they partnered with all these government entities just to kind of fast track permitting and things that they wanted to do. And they're already moving on it. And this is privately funded. This is
what
not publicly funded.
You talked to the folks from Poseidon, and I want to know, what do they think is the key to promoting this? How do you convince people, you know what, leave the car over there, get on this boat. There's a bar on the boat, by the way. Get on this boat and we'll take you across. The cost is relatively low. How are they planning on doing that?
Well, they're really hoping that, you know, a lot of this just starts by kind of word of mouth, and their hope, you know, and what they told me is that every weekend they're seeing, you know, many more people riding it on the weekend than on the weekdays. And those are mostly people that live here, just kind of taking it for pleasure, just like getting used to what it is to hop on a ferry and commute to the beach that way. So they're seeing a lot of people from the mainland go over, go swimming for a couple hours and then taking it back. So they're really hoping that by people starting it on a, you know, almost like a recreational basis, that over time people will start to see it as, okay, this is actually a real option here.
Yeah. And the other thing too, is there any conversation with Poseidon about expansion to any other part of South Florida, Fort Lauderdale, Delray, Lake Worth, West Palm Beach?
There is. And that's something that's actually pretty interesting, because they're, I don't have the exact number, but they're putting a lot of money into this. They're, you know, the CEO, Jonathan Sylvia, told me that they're already actually designing and building two more boats to expand the fleet. And the main thing that they want to do is connect to different parts of South Florida on the water. So they want to go up to Aventura. They want to go to Haulover Beach. They have plans actually to potentially go to Matheson Hammock and Black Point, which the county has actually studied those routes, and they found that they are good. Like, that can actually cut people's commute times very severely. But, you know, the Black Point one, it would probably be in the future. But just 3 years ago in 2017, actually a county study did say we should start, you know, a ferry route to Matheson Hammock, and people in that area can take that over the water into the downtown area and then just get off the roads and alleviate the traffic.
Well, there is a ferry system. It does exist, and it's out there. And you know what? If you've tried it, or if you're going to try it, we'd love to hear from you. Find us on our social media. Let us know. Again, talking with WLRN reporter Danny Rivero. He tried it. He told us all about it. Check out some of the photos, by the way, on our social media. Danny, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, Louis.
And by the way, we've been hearing from you on social media. Let's see, we hear from FixMDT on Twitter says, ferries aren't feasible, but every 2 years we try again and again and again. This mode of transit is gimmicky and not feasible for daily use. We also heard from Jackie Paper on Twitter, who said, this would have solved my I want a bike to work for Miami Beach, but I'm too terrified to bike over the causeway dilemma. What do you think about a ferry system? And, you know, I didn't even get to the question, but as the oceans rise, you know, more water will be part of our lives. Maybe ferries are just the way to go. I don't know. Find us on social media at WLRN Sundial. Let us know what you think. Would you take it? And if you have, tell us what you think of that. All right, still to come, there's a lot of CARES Act money still available for businesses. The deadline, though, to apply is coming up this week. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. You know, 2020 has been a very difficult year for small businesses. 60% of businesses that reported closing since the start of the pandemic will remain closed. That's according to Yelp's Economic Impact Report. That's hundreds of thousands of mom and pop shops in your neighborhood that are not going to be around next year. There's still funding available, though, from the CARES Act for those businesses that are struggling to hang on. Miami-Dade's Rise Fund has millions of dollars in loans that it needs to shell out before the end of the year, and this week is the last chance to apply. Joining me now is MJ Green, the fund director of Rise Miami-Dade at the Dade County Federal Credit Union. MJ, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity.
You know, my mind is blown. I don't get this. We still have tens of millions of dollars of CARES Relief Act for renters, landlords, business owners. It's just sitting there. How in the world did you get to the end of 2020 and you still have all that money sitting there?
Well, I think part of it is a little bit of fatigue, right? You remember we started out early March with PPP and EDIL. And I think that those programs did help out a lot of businesses. But all of the information that was swirling around at the very beginning, I think, caused a lot of fatigue in the ecosystem, you know, applying for the different programs. And I think people just got a little bit tired of applying for different things, the different grants. Maybe they got some, maybe they didn't get some. And then also, too, you know, if you're a business owner and you're working in your business every day trying to save your business, maybe you aren't hearing about some of these other smaller local programs because they're not on the national news. And so that's why I really am thankful for this opportunity to speak to your great listeners about the program that we have going on right now.
You have millions of dollars left in the fund for small business loans, right?
Mm-hmm. This is true.
All right. And again, we have to remind people, these are loans. We're going to explain those a little bit. Who benefits from this? What sort of business should be calling you?
Right. So we're really looking for the small businesses. The business owner and the business both need to be located in Miami-Dade County. We're also looking for businesses that have been in business for the past 2 years, that are under 50 employees and under $5 million in revenue. Miami-Dade County is the most diverse and the greatest small business economy in the United States. And so we really wanna make sure that these dollars get to them, but these dollars were kind of allocated for them and with them in mind.
And give me some examples of some of these businesses, like what kind of businesses?
Oh, everything from the nail salon to barbershops, restaurants, I've seen even security businesses, a little bit of everything. The gamut is pretty broad. Everything that you can think of, your favorite local mom and pop to, you know, the local clothing store. I was working with seamstress a couple days ago. So a little bit of everything.
And, you know, I was thinking too, because from the very first question I asked you, and the other thing that popped into my mind was, I wonder how many people feel like, well, you know, it's going to go to people who don't need it. Because we saw those stories of big companies that got money and we thought they don't need it.
Yeah.
Or people who took the money and they spent it frivolously. How do we know that this money isn't going to be spent that way or that, it's going to go to the right folks?
Sure. And so this program was really thought with that in mind. When we put this together and then the Brain Trust that got together to put this together, we really were, you know, thinking about PPP and some of the stories that we heard at the very beginning about them going to some of the bigger businesses like, the Lakers organization and different things like that. This is for the small mom and pop small businesses in Miami-Dade County. And so when putting this together, we got together with the local CDFIs, which are community development financial institutions. We are working with three of them, Miami Bayside, Axion USA, which has recently changed their name to Ascendus, and BBIF, the Black Business Investment Fund. And the Dade County Federal Credit Union, which is the administrator of the fund, is also a CDFI. And these CDFIs, collectively, we have over 100 years of community development experience in working with these types of small businesses that you and I are both talking about. So we really thought about this in earnest and really wanted to create something that was for them, right? And so the minimum credit threshold, as we realize that credit has been deeply impacted by the coronavirus, especially if you're a small business owner, is 520. Yeah. The interest rate is 3.25%, which keeps it very, you know, cheap and affordable. And then the paperwork requirements are not a heavy lift. You're talking about taxes, bank statements, and two unexpired IDs.
And my understanding, too, is that the qualifications, you know, for this have changed as well to make it a little bit easier. The application process has been made easier, too, right?
This is true. So what we have done is realizing that, unfortunately, the coronavirus and the impacts that it's having have lasted far longer than any of us initially anticipated. At the very beginning, we had 3 months before a business or a borrower was needed to make their first payment. Now we've extended the first payment all the way to February 2022. So you're talking about a year and a couple of months. That gives the business a wonderful opportunity to really weather this storm, use the money in their business to help them kind of ride through this wave and the economic turbulence that we're all experiencing till February 2022, and then to make payments then on what is, you know, we are charging 3.25%. That's the Wall Street Journal prime rate. That's what banks typically give to their top tier clients. You know, there are no, I think, loan programs out there with 520 credit in which you can get that type of interest rate.
And so, you know, again, as I mentioned a couple of times, as a reminder to folks that the deadline's coming up, because it's the end of the year, and so that money is sitting there, but that may be a little intimidating for folks. So what would you say to them about trying to meet that deadline, and again, what that process for application is like?
The process is pretty, you know, we thought about this, we wanted to make it, you know, easy, fast, and efficient. You can go to the website, www.risemiamidade.com, apply. It only takes a few minutes. Most of the information on that first step are things that the business owner would know off the top of their head. Address, EIN number, those types of things. The documents, after you do that, you'll be reached out to by one of our local CDFI partners, and they will work with you to create your, to put your documents together. If you have any questions, they can answer all those questions. And again, they have years of experience in working with these types of businesses. And then after that, it's sent back up to the credit union. We give it a final review, and then you're funded. And that's, you know, it's a very simple process and nothing to be too concerned about. If you have questions, we have FAQs on our website in both Spanish, English, and Creole.
And, you know, just a little pushback here. We have to remind people it's a loan, and there are going to be businesses that are there are businesses barely hanging on. If you go out of business, you're still responsible for that loan?
The loans are personally guaranteed. So in some instances, yes, you are still responsible.
All right, good to know. We got to know all the information. Again, talking with MJ Green, Fund Director of Rise Miami-Dade at the Dade County Federal Credit Union. Again, the deadline to apply for the CARES Act funds is December 20th. We have more information on our social media at WLRN Sundial. And again, you can post your questions there too. We'll try to get you connected with MJ if in case you have more questions. Again, millions of dollars still sitting out there before the end of the year that's available for businesses. So again, find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. You know, MJ, I want to know from you, because I'm sure that you see it. You're there in the front lines, and you talk to a lot of these business owners. And I don't know, what's it been like, you know, this year, the kind of stories that you're hearing from people? How are you dealing? How are you dealing with that? Because you know you're seeing people lose everything.
It's really tough. You know, I think that you have to, you know, enter all of the conversations, trying to be as compassionate as you possibly can be. These are people that have, you know, put up their own capital, sometimes their own family's capital, to start these businesses, and have been successful for many years. And now, you know, because of the virus and the shutdowns, they're feeling a lot of pressure. And so we're really there to try to help them, to try to be an alternative option, to provide some capital that they can be able to really weather the storm. You know, we have a mechanism where the businesses are able to borrow six times their rent, because we realize that a business's largest fixed costs typically is their rent. So hopefully they'll be able to pay their rent either in the future or rent in arrears to keep their doors open, right? Miami is an amazing small business community. And really, the small business community is what gives Miami the flavor that it has. And so we want to make sure that those businesses are able to keep their doors open. And so we're working with them, working with the CDFIs on the ground to continue to provide technical assistance. But it is, you know, a really, really tough time. And that's why we've lowered the credit score requirements. And also, you know, extending that term, I think, gives people a lot of breathing room to be able to make some decisions, use this money for their business appropriately, and weather the storm.
Is there a story, though, that's touched you really, really hard with what you've seen over the last 9 months or so?
You know, I've talked to a lot of people who have been very, very thankful. You know, I think that we have helped quite a few businesses not shut their doors. There's a hair salon across the street from my office that we've been able to help. There's some businesses that we've been able to, you know, this funding has given them the breathing room to be able to pivot. Right. Moving, whether that's moving some products online, if that's a restaurant and, you know, finally taking the steps to add Uber Eats and DoorDash and those different things. I mean, there's been just so many stories. And I've been also extremely thankful and humbled to be able to do this work, to be able to help these businesses. You know, the kind phone calls and the thank yous that I've received, whether via email or through the phone, on the multitude of different businesses that we have been able to help is what really keeps me, you know, working up late at night and to process as many applications as we can. You know, we're receiving about 100 applications a day, and everyone on our team is working extra hours, because not only do we realize, you know, how important it is, not only for this program to get the money out, but we realize how important it is for the community. We've already done over 450 loans in a really about a 4 or 5 month period to businesses throughout Miami-Dade County. And I mean, that's really huge. You know, those 400 or 500 businesses have about 5 employees on average a piece. That's over 2,000 families that have been affected. You know, 2,000 individual families that are able to, you know, keep the doors open, take their employees. And so I think that, though, you know, there's a host of stories, and those are the kind of things that keep us working hard.
Yeah, and I mean, you said the qualifications have changed, but have you seen people turn down for these loans? I mean, should that be happening in a pandemic?
Well, you know, there's a risk to lending money. What should happen in a pandemic, and what shouldn't happen? Could things have been differently? I would say yes, but I think that this is really, you know, the best option that we have. Some businesses aren't going to make it, you know, and do you want to put money into a business that is going to fail anyway? I don't know.
Have you seen a business that you know probably isn't going to make it and you got to tell them that?
No, that's not on me to tell them that. We're not saying that they are going to make it or not. I've seen businesses where I maybe personally could see that they have a rough road ahead.
Yeah.
But they've still been able to get this loan. We want to be able to help out as many businesses as we can. We are not the jury on who's going to survive or who's not going to survive. If they fit within the qualifications, that meaning that the business is in Miami-Dade County, they've been in business for the past 2 years, and the business owner lives in Miami-Dade County, and they can turn in all that paperwork, they will get the loan.
What are the businesses saying they need right now? Is it about paying their workers, or as you said, maybe it's the rent, or I don't know how many like businesses are trying to transition because they have to change?
I think I've heard more conversations about the rent. I think that, you know, unfortunately, landlords, and maybe they couldn't be, have not been willing to work with some of the businesses that I've talked to. And so that's put a lot of pressure on them to be able to, again, the largest fixed cost typically is rent. And so our program, really thinking about that, we've been able to give some people some breathing room, right? And I think that we are all starting to see the vaccines being delivered. Brighter days are ahead. There are other countries that are opening up. And so I think that there are a lot of businesses that if they can just hold on a little bit longer, brighter days are, you know, not too far away from us. And so helping them to be able to do that, I think is really, you know, I couldn't be more proud to be a part of the credit union as they've stepped up to really be that partner for the community and to facilitate this program to help out all these amazing businesses.
Yeah. Let me finish with this, you know, as a part of the community. And again, having this insight that you get to meet so many of these business owners, what did your take? I know that brighter days are ahead, but we don't know when that's coming. We don't know how much longer, and some businesses won't be able to hang on. But how do you think Miami and South Florida is going to look different after this is over?
I think that Miami is a resilient community that has, you know, changed a lot. I haven't lived here too long, but I've visited often. And I think that this is just a bump in the road. We will get over this. I think that the fabric, the beauty, the culture of Miami will come back just as strong. It might be a little bit different, right? There might be less sit-down restaurants and maybe more takeout places. But I think that Miami will continue to be resilient. It will continue to use the lessons of all of the first generation and Latin American folks that are here to be entrepreneurial, and will come up with an entrepreneurial solutions that will keep Miami as flavorful as ever. I'm really excited about Miami's future. This program and the Rise Fund, we will be here in the future and continue to support the small business community. Right. So I think it will be a little bit different, but I think that I'm excited about it. And I think that entrepreneurship is about taking on these challenges and making something out of it.
MJ Green, Fund Director of Rise Miami-Dade at the Dade County Federal Credit Union. Again, the deadline to apply for the CARES Act funds, the loans, is December 20th. We have more information on our social media at WLRN Sundial. MJ, a pleasure. Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you. I'm a big fan, and I really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Well, that's our program for this Tuesday, December 15th. We'll be back again tomorrow. As always, I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for listening. Hey, stay safe. Be good to each other. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.